Would you introduce yourself, please?
My name is Doparo.
See, now I know how to pronounce it. What percentage of the world says Doparo?
A large percentage.
Right. So how are you going to solve that problem? You figured out like a mnemonic device?
Can you figure one out for me?
How much you got?
Still looking.
I know that there is Syracuse. I know that you're, quote, and I say, quote, self-taught. Your first actual recording was age 15. You do not like it.
Something I was thinking about today is I don't have a very good filter. You know, I don't know how, I guess this kind of goes back to, do you want to like say the thing that people miss or do you want to make up the lie? It's like I write 100% from my experience because I can't not, I can't turn that thing off.
That probably scares people because when they listen to songs and words like growth, decay, or things like that, they probably look and go, what happened to this nice Jewish girl from Syracuse?
And I think that that's the other thing that I would have to say is that I write 100% from my experience, but there is a part of my experience that I'm not able to channel in music. And it's like, for some reason, loss inspires me to write. That's maybe because it's my own personal healing or answer to myself in those moments. But yeah, there is this whole other side of joy that I experience in the world that I just haven't.
It doesn't make it to the record.
It's the 11th track. It's the B-sides.
The big pop song, I Feel Love 24/7, is not quite hit yet.
Yeah, we did have one song that we took off the record that wasn't making sense, and it kind of had a MJ feel.
So what was it about Syracuse, do you think, that kind of has taken you here?
I think if you were up in a place like Syracuse and you have access to people who are not from Syracuse, which I did because my grandparents are all from New York City, you start to imagine what that would be like. And I think, you know, like all the great philosophers are from the cold countries because they spend their lives.
The Russians in Siberia.
The Russians, the Germans, they're like spending their days inside contemplating life as opposed to like, you know, being out in the sun. You don't want to think about those bigger questions as much. And I think there's something to say, you know, there's something to be said for that in terms of creating art and growing up in Syracuse. It's like you're indoors for 2/3 of the year.
That's scary.
It's scary. What are you going to do? You know, for me, music was an outlet to start like imagining and envisioning a different life.
Okay. So we need to fill in some weird blanks here because age 15, and I'll say it so you don't have to say it.
Okay.
You made a record that you listened to a while ago and you didn't like so much. And you decided, we're not going to be releasing that as the follow-up. But then in 2011, there's a Future Islands cover and then things start to happen. But the definition of things starting to happen, even 2011 to here and getting buzz and then not getting buzz. And then, but we're sitting here in 2015, right? So that is, we never talk about age, so I'll make it up. That's plus or minus 15 years. That's a lot of time in between. So there had to have been childhood and college and high school and all of that. Where, and there's also the story told, I'll just wrap it all in a big, really untidy bow. There's also the, I gave up music for a while and then I came back.
So I'm 15, I'm in Syracuse, you know, the only thing the city's known for is snow, college sports, air conditioning units. And I just start writing songs. I don't know where they came from. I was just like in my parents' house writing songs. I decided to go into a studio one day and put all these songs down. And I'm going to like make a little record to sell to my friends. That happens. It's great. You know, it is what it is and it's over. And then I go to college and I somehow manifest going to a music school but not studying music. I go to Oberlin. I'm surrounded by musicians but not doing it because I feel I don't have any training. I had taken some guitar lessons in high school and otherwise I don't have training. I don't feel like I can even am not even entitled to like try to do it. And then I moved to San Francisco after Oberlin, a city that I mythologized as a child as like, you know, the Haight-Ashbury music scene. And a friend of mine who's the lead singer of the band The California Honey Drops heard I was coming out there and he'd heard me sing once at Oberlin in a band and he was like, I want to start a country band with you when you come out there. So I started, we didn't form a country band, but he basically started giving me some singing tips, which revolved around Irma Thomas recordings, where we would just listen and he'd be like, listen to this phrasing, listen again and imitate that. And I decided that I was really in love with music and needed to pursue it.
Okay, so that takes us to what? 8 years ago?
Yes, exactly. That's 2007. 2008, I moved to New York and I formed this like 10-person soul band that did not go anywhere. And during that time, I was waitressing and trying to live in New York and afford it and also like somehow make 10 people want to commit to this band. And but it was just, you know, it was fun. And at the end, it got a little demoralizing. And I was like, maybe, you know, music isn't cut out for me and I need to like make some sort of peace with this.
So that's where you stopped, per se. How long did you stop for?
I stopped for a year. I stopped, right. Actually more like a year and a half.
And was that the first India trip? I'm trying to do the timeline and figure it out. So was that the first India, was that the 7 months in India?
Yes.
Wow, I guessed right.
You guessed right. That was, I realized the band was going to be over. I was like, okay, I need to kind of make peace with this. And during that time, I started just focusing on waitressing, saving money for a trip to be by myself for a year. Because what I was doing wasn't working, you know, just like...
So you have to figure something out.
Yeah, partying, living this extreme life in New York and making music that I thought was what I should be making instead of like actually going inside and being like, what is my own story? And meditation wasn't like, oh, if I meditate, I'll understand what to do with music. But it was like, if I meditate, then I won't... Maybe I can get a little glimpse of peace and not be sad about the fact that this thing didn't work out for me.
Do you think the fact that everything you do involves isolation? I mean, a cabin in Syracuse, right? Minnesota, Wisconsin. All of your musical practice also involves a lot of isolation.
Definitely. I mean, I didn't put that together necessarily, but I think there's for sure a grain of truth that the like... understanding of how to be alone came from growing up in Syracuse.
She bases her music on Tibetan folk songs, and when she was over in India, she heard a singer, and then she goes back and blah, blah. That can be read a bunch of times. I'm more interested in a pop song realm, how the Tibetan folk song, because you mentioned Irma Thomas, so let's take Irma Thomas phrasing, let's put that with Tibetan folk songs, let's put that in a stew and see what it tastes like.
Right. I mean, it wasn't a conscious thing. I think the Tibetan opera has informed my music because it taught me how to breathe in a different way, taught me how to access my voice in a different way. And from studying that, it's naturally a part of the fabric from which I'm pulling, you know, inspiration from when I write.
See, I haven't heard that way or seen that way anyplace else. I've just heard it as, she likes Tibetan opera.
Yeah, it's not like this conscious thing where I'm like, oh, I can learn this art form and then I can translate, you know, this culture that's not even mine into these other people's music. It's just something I was inspired by, something that I was fortunate enough to cross paths with and changed my life. And it's part of where I come from musically now and where I sit.
So this record is a long time coming.
Yeah.
From first song that you wrote that's on this album to when this will be released, how long is that?
I started writing songs for this record at the top of 2012.
Yeah, so almost a full, like 3.5 years from place to place. And yet throughout that, you know, you did some tours, you opened for Sylvain Esso, and these songs are out there. So a lot of them have been out there. But there was a lot of stuff from before that that became part of this. So what did you see as the thread that kind of when you're sequencing and when you're putting this thing together and you're going, okay, I have to make a record out of all this now and I'm not going to do a new record because I've got all this material that deserves to really get out there and get what it should, you know, what it deserves. So and even in terms of sound and stuff, how did you kind of say, how is this going to turn into this?
It's a very good question. And it was a hard question to answer to myself. I showed up in Wisconsin with 40 demos and I played it for the producers, BJ and Sean, and I was like, help me figure this out because I've lost perspective. My first record I made in 6 months, I knew exactly what it was about. The theme, the title, it was all clear. It was a 6 month period. It's like, I think records are probably best if they're made in like a pregnancy period of 9 months because then you know exactly what is happening. but 3.5 years, you go through so many changes, it's impossible to know. So I really relied on trusting the taste and insight of the other people I was working with to kind of guide me and be like, this is what, let's focus this. This is what the 10 songs are that we should work with. These are the sounds that I'm hearing in you. These are the inspirations we're pulling from nature, from electronic, from the current, past, future.
And is this where the in quotes, which has been written up many times, the whole concept of that, you know, it's soundscapes, right? It's colors versus, you know, like trying to get the right beats.
Absolutely. And we made the record over, you know, the four seasons in Wisconsin. I was like flying out to Minneapolis.
I like Winneapolis.
To Wisconsin and Minneapolis.
You ever had a Winneapple? They're kind of like a Macintosh meets a delicious.
I never heard of that before.
Neither have I. I think it's time to manufacture the Winneapple.
Yeah, I was there during every season. So we were pulling from that.
Being that this is so you and so personal, with co-songwriting, which we all know what my audience knows what co-songwriting is. How did you avoid those co-songwriters messing with your stuff?
I wrote with a lot more than those five. And I think
the ones that survived?
The ones that survived. But also, I always show up with concept or lyrics already written so that I know that I'm going to be a little bit in control of what I'm trying to say.
So what do they do? If you show up with concept and lyrics already written, is this mainly for help with melody and sound and all of that?
Yeah, melody, and I have a lot of ideas for melody. I think it's mostly like instrumentation, chords, kind of like directing and helping me focus.
So it's almost co-producer in some ways.
In a lot of ways.
So when you go to a co-songwriter, are they aware that this is what their role is going to be?
I think every co-songwriter sort of knows that it's going to be different each time and are like, you're staying open to the process if you're going to meet with random people or try it out.
Let's talk about nostalgia, because you've known that that's been the record that I've played. That's been my favorite song. And it wasn't until I really started reading the great quote from you that we're all wrapped up in old stories and miss out on the new ones you could be writing. I love that quote. But tell me about working with Peter, and because that's an interesting co-songwriter to work with, because this is a guy who, you know, he and his partner in crime, you talk about melodies. So where did nostalgia start, and then how did it become working with Peter?
So Peter and I were paired together. I did a month in Stockholm in 2012, I think, or 13, I can't remember now. And we had like 4 days together right before his first child was born. So it's like a really interesting time in his life. And we were on this weird bender. We were like writing a song a day and they were great. But the last day I brought these lyrics, they just came to me the day before and they were pretty much all written out. And I said, let's do something with this. And him and I are an interesting match because we come from such different places musically. He's a very classic songwriter, really informed by like the Beatles and this sort of super structural thing. I have more of like an R&B and soul background. In terms of rhyme scheme, in terms of different changes to take it, I think it was a great yin yang because he suggested things that I just didn't even have in my toolbox.
So what I'm going to guess, but in terms of melody, mm-hmm. What changed there? Did you have The Nostalgia Is Killing Us? Was that melody in there? Was the middle eight in there? What was in there? And what as a result of his Beatlesque classical... What is it that found its way into the song? Because the song has also got one heck of a beat. And I know where that came from, too. So
yeah. All I showed up with were the lyrics. And I had kind of the chorus melody in mind. But I think I remember writing the verse now. And there were certain turns where he was like, no, we should go major with this. Don't go minor. You know, don't do the thing you always do.
Which made it more of a pop song?
Ultimately. You know, like I said, I didn't see what it was in that moment. I think I like lack perspective on how other people are going to perceive the music.
All of this time that you've spent alone, all this time you've spent thinking, all this time that you quit and came back. Mm-hmm. Now it's touring. It's being on the road. It's a million conversations talking about yourself. And you're a pretty soul. And I mean, soul. There's two souls to you. There's S-O-U-L and there's S-O-L-E, mm-hmm. Right? You're a people person, but you're also very much I need my space. I need my time. So I'm going to say this is going to sound funny, but I'm serious about this. What's your mantra now for moving forward with this and keeping it going and realizing that there's going to be the really, really highs and then the, oh God, am I doing this? And et cetera, et cetera. Have you thought about that?
Oh, definitely. It's coming up a lot. I mean, for one, I finally have a consistent practice. I'm practicing yoga like every day. But the other thing is I've had to create some rules for myself because with all these, like, you know, I'm supposed to be on social media or doing this thing. It's just too much checking screens and being interrupted from doing the actual work. So I'll, you know, turn my phone off for hours or be like, you know, check this once a day. You don't need to check email more than two times.
Do you really? Wow. And have you informed the team that that's the way it's going to be to work with you?
No, because they know that I'm still going to answer everything each day. You know, it's I'm still going to get the work done, but that is just what I've had to kind of, institute for my own personal sense of sanity and like, and continuing to like stay grounded on this earth and not become a lot of musicians, I think when they're starting to do press can lean towards the narcissistic. And that's like the exact opposite of what I'm trying to accomplish in it.
So the last thing we do is I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. And what it is two of your songs on the outside and then songs by others on the inside. It is not a playlist.